Welcome to the Ashley Elaine Podcast, where soul meets strategy, spirit meets systems, and healing becomes your legacy. This is a space for visionaries, healers, builders, my cycle breakers, and leaders who know they're here to create more than just ideas. They're here to build something that will last. We talk about all things from spirituality to healing, public health, to birthing your soul purpose. So whether you're birthing a program, intervention, a business, reimagining your current work, or reclaiming your whole life's rhythm, you are in the right place. Let's begin. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Ashley Elaine Podcast. My name is Love Ashley Elaine, and I'm here to be your guide, to be your favorite pink sheep, to be everything and anything you need me and want me to be on this show, only on this show. This episode, I'm excited to share this amazing and most beautiful conversation with a new friend, Coach Lewis. He is a Philly native. I love Philly. If you know me, you know I love Philly. Who now lives in Ecuador. So prepare your hearts, prepare your minds, get your tea, get comfy as we dive into Coach Lewis sharing his story with all of us here. Stay tuned. And welcome back to the Ashley Elaine Podcast. So I have not done an interview in it feels like years, and I'm so happy to be doing them again. This is probably my favorite part of doing the podcast, is because I never wanted to share my story. I love listening to other people's stories because everybody's story has the ability to make an impact on one person, 100 people, a million people. So today I am joined by Ian. He was born and raised in Philly, but over time he realized that city life in the US just wasn't aligning with who he is and how he wanted to live. This call led him to the Andes Mountain of rural Ecuador, with a lot of story in between, where he lives and works now. Ian's purpose and passion are rooted in embodying a strong, loving, authentic, and grounded expression of the divine masculine, which is so beautiful, and in supporting others in living empowered lives aligned with their purpose. He currently works as a life coach and as an assistant director of a spiritually based nonprofit. Both roles align deeply with his calling. He lives on a farm where he spends his days working and learning from Mother Earth, and he's actively building towards an off-the-grid, sustainable, organic farm that reflects the values he lives and teaches and lives by. Same difference. So this season of Stories as Medicine is about telling the truth, not just about our growth, but what actually happens and what the cost is to growth. Like, there's a cost to everything. It's about the unraveling, the unlearning, and the courage it takes to choose freedom so that something new can be planted. Ian, thank you so much for coming onto the show. Let's give a round of applause for Ian.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This is a pleasure.
Yes, yes. So, your life reflects that kind of journey in a very real way. Tell us how you got to Ecuador.
All right. Well, yeah, it really starts. So when I was 21, it was the end of my junior year at Temple University. And it was the last finals had just ended, so we were celebrating. Me and my friends drank. We were walking to the bar, and I stopped to urinate behind a bush on campus. And a police officer saw and kind of like yelled something to me. I walked over. I was like, "Oh, I'm just urinating. I'm just peeing." And he mumbled something I didn't hear. I got closer, and I said, "You know, something casually." I didn't wasn't as thoughtful as I should have been, but I was kind of like, oh, I'm just peeing, like we're good cop. And then I gave him a second to kind of, see if he wanted to say something or stop. I think he mumbled something else, and I walked by him, and I thought that was that. Met up with my friends, and he decided to he ran and got his bike and like chased me down and kind of snuck behind me and tried to grab me. And on the stand, he told me that I said, fuck you, cop, which is kind of ridiculous. Like, I remember saying, we cool, cop. I guess that, whatever. So he tried to grab me. I stepped to the side, dodged him, and then I ran to the left. Should have stayed still. Ran to the left and jumped down a flight of stairs, but it was raining. Slipped and fell. And then he chased me, got me, and then just pretty much started pounding on me. Other cops came. And they got a few kicks in on me. And then I woke up in Temple University Hospital with a light in my eye. I had a black eye. The next morning, they took me to the holding cell where two other cops tried to explain to me that how it was all my fault. But I knew that that was not the case. Spent 8 hours in a holding cell, and that experience changed my life forever. Before I was like on a good trajectory. I was a normal dude doing the college thing on a nice path. And I just got so much taken away from me. Even like for me at the time, what was worse than just getting beat up by the police and being locked up and being in jail, that was traumatic in itself. But I lost really amazing opportunities. Like 2 days after, I was scheduled to go to Jamaica for a service immersion project through Temple, where I think like 300 students wrote essays and they picked 12, one being me. So I got that taken away. And then that summer, I had an internship for working with Down syndrome and autistic people at a summer camp, paid internship. That was a big deal back then. I got that taken away. And then the following semester, I was accepted to study abroad in Rome, Italy, where I'm half Italian. And I got that taken away. So I pretty much went from like, living a good normal life to like having everything taken away from me. And it was devastating. So I kind of went, I went through the, at first, I actually kept a strong spirit, so to speak. Oh, I should add, actually, probably the most important part that I forgot is the fact that when it first happened, they charged me with five charges, one being aggravated assault on a police officer, which is a felony. So they lied, they overreacted, lied, and then charged me with a felony. And so at first I was like, I can't let this define me. I gotta continue working hard. And luckily I was with some friends who recorded the back end of the altercation. So I was like, I know we got video that like we have the truth on video. I'm gonna be all right. I can't let it get to me. And so I started to actually work harder and be a better student. But one fateful day, my friend, he was like talking to me about aliens. And I was like, you're crazy, bro. What are you talking about? He showed me a song that a rapper named Ab Soul that I really liked called Nibiru. And in this song, he was talking about all these concepts I never heard of, spiritual concepts and alien concepts. And I was like, what is this man talking about? And so I started Googling it and I just got fascinated. It was aliens and then it was history and then it was politics. And I dove really, really deep into a rabbit hole very fast. To the point where I stopped focusing on school and I started focusing on learning about whatever like kind of came away. I kind of got addicted. Like I was like, smoking a lot of weed to deal with the pain and watching, conspiracy theory videos, to be honest. And so that led me to getting bad grades that semester. The following semester, I was like, okay, I can't let this define me. I got to keep going. I'm getting closer to this trial where they're, trying to put me away for 10 to 15 years for something I didn't do. A week before the spring semester final, my girlfriend at the time, she broke up with me. And like, everything was getting fuzzy because I kind of started being like, wait, like what we've been told about the world is a lie. I want to learn. You know, you give them the history, and then there's the history we're not told. And I was obsessed with that, right? So my girlfriend breaks up with me a week before finals. I'm like super deeply depressed, and I don't go to my finals. So I drop out of college at the same time all of my friends are graduating college, going to, you know, different jobs and different opportunities, and I just have nothing. And that's when I got like extremely depressed. So the trial, they charged me with a felony. A week before the trial, they dropped everything and was pretty much like, do public service, go to this drinking class, and you're good. And, you know, I was told later that they were going to do that the whole time. They just wanted to kind of scare me, you know, into shutting up.
That's
So this,
horrible.
yes.
That is so horrible. This is
So
our
that's like,
system.
that's how the story starts.
No, just I think that's this is this that's the system, right? It's like, how can I scare you into, just like you said, right? The history that we're taught, and then the history that they cover up, that they don't teach us, that they don't want us to know. They don't want us to awaken to whatever our own truth is and those spiritual truths about ourselves, because that's where we are more powerful. But for the system to be like, oh, we just wanted to scare you to be quiet, it's like, but you want us to trust you.
Yeah, it's not a good trust building exercise.
No. So from your, like, so now you've hit the end of your college career, whatever that looks like, right? Your friends are graduating. You've hit this other pivotal moment, right? Like, in my head, I'm a very visual person. In my head, I'm seeing like them going one direction and you are now heading in another direction. And just for whoever's listening, I know like the beginning parts of that other direction always looks like damn.
Yeah, super damn. It was pretty much a very, very deep depression.
How did
Because,
that,
you
how did
know,
you move through that depression? How did you?
well, it definitely took time. Pretty much maybe like a year, I want to say. There's kind of a lost year where like I almost don't remember a lot. Like, the summer of 2013 was the worst. Because, well, first of all, like, you know, you're talking about the system. I had become ex obsessed about learning about systems. So I was learning about our financial system and how, you know, that's scam based. I was learning about the judicial system while I was in the judicial system. And then I was realizing that, like, oh, this wasn't built for me. This was built, you know, for me to be just a worker to benefit somebody else. And I'm learning all these things. So I'm pretty much like, F everything. Like, if they, well, before, if they want to put me, I remember thinking, like, if they're going to lock me up for 10, 15 years for getting beat up by police officers, I'm killing myself. Like, so I became very suicidal. And that's when I became addicted to weed, where if I wasn't super high, I was probably thinking about like something very depressive or killing myself. And so like it was very, very deep. I actually, so you know, I would say I had a weak attempt at suicide. I took a handful of sleeping pills when I could have took the whole bottle. You know, woke up and just the struggle. That summer was like, I'd be driving down the street and I'd be like looking at the buildings in Philly, just imagining jumping off. Or if I just move my wheel like this, it would all be over. So just like deep dark depression. Well, really, we're kind of like, so I was addicted to learning. I was moving kind of from like history to religion to spirituality. And I think that was the spark where, you know, I started learning about Buddhism and Confucianism and Taoism and like, oh, like there is a better way. There is beauty in the world because everything had got taken from me. So I kind of dove really deep to the point of, you know what? I'm going to be a monk and I'm going to disappear into some cave somewhere and I'm going to do this whole journey like Buddha. So I got really, really deep into that. And then at the same time, I started plotting my escape out of the States. At the same time, we decided to sue Temple University because they lied and they put me through this hell. And then around the same time, a friend of mine asked me to be her manager, a music manager. She was an incredible singer. And, we had a whole history where I would tell her, if you want to really pursue it, you got to move to Philly. And she finally moved to Philly and asked me to be her manager. So that was like my first like kind of purpose, where it's like, oh, I didn't know anything about being a manager, but I had a good network. I used to throw parties and I knew DJs and people in that scene. So I was like, oh, let's do it. So I started Googling what a manager did and doing it. And then that led me to becoming a manager of a band. And so that was like, I kind of started to have a purpose of like, okay, like this is fun. I'm good at it enough. Let me do this. And then, yeah, but that whole phase is like still very blurry because I was, super high, super depressed, just hanging on. And damn, like, put it was like, I could never really put into words how dark and difficult that time was.
That's ooh, if you've never been there, God bless you, 'cause that's a period of time like I don't wish on anybody, right? Even my worst enemy, the person that may have led me to that, right? And there's something gracious about hitting the bottom, right? There's something uh-oh, there's something inviting about, this is what happens when I start playing with stuff. There's something inviting about hitting the bottom and allowing yourself to hit it, right? Sometimes you have to allow yourself to hit all of those rocks on the way down. Like you kind of, it's almost like you don't have any control over hitting it, right? Because there's always a purpose tied to it,
Hundred
right?
percent.
Purpose is not always just the light and the work and all of these, the glitz and the glam of what people have made purpose become, right? Purpose is going to ask you, can you sit in the dark for a minute?
Yes, 100%.
Because then look what happened. You had someone come ask you about being their manager, right? So now that catapulted you into something else to learn, right? And I always feel like history, religion, and spirituality, like they're in a triangle. Like they're you can't really learn one without the other. So like when we talked earlier, when we talked about Cambodia, that's what I thought about when you said that just now. It's just like, oh, that actually really does make sense, because in order to understand the spiritual richness of Cambodia, right, you got to learn the history of the people, the land. Not learn it full throttle, but like just understand it, have at least basic knowledge of that part of Asia to then understand, oh, well, this is where that religion came from, right? It's all tied to each other. But what people fail to understand also is what tied to it is not just the light of it, but also those dark times that have to come with it, because those dark times of history is where we tap into our stories and the spirituality, right? That connection of the two. How did you end up like just bringing all of that together? Like now you have someone that asks you to be their manager. You just did this deep dive into like the history of this country, spirituality, religion. When you said yes to being her manager, what did you feel start to kind of move that brought all of these nuances together that you had did so much research in?
Interesting. I guess at that specific time, it was kind of like just something to grasp onto. I was just kind of floating and barely surviving existence. And so when she asked, she's an incredible person, and it was just like something interesting to do that gave me purpose, really. So as far as like it took years to really like work through everything that happened. But like, at that moment, I was still just in the mess. But it was like something that I didn't have to just like look at it all day long. It was like something where like, okay, at least I can like put my energy. And I was deep in my victim consciousness. I can look back, I guess understandably so, because I did nothing wrong and I was just thrown all of this like hell, really. But yeah, at that moment, like I was just happy to like be doing something interesting. Because yeah, until then I was, I was an umpire. Like I was umpiring baseball games, I was landscaping a little bit, I felt like dead end. I didn't have my degree. I just felt stuck. And again, I was deeply depressed. Suicide was like an option. I was thinking about it a lot. Yeah, the it took years. Like, it happened in 2012, and I feel like out 2013, 14 was when I was able to look at it and like, oh, this was the best thing that ever happened to me. Because this like, this forced me to go through the mud and become who I'm supposed to be and look at all the friggin' shadow and all the pain on earth and really like sit with it and just get deep into the, the debauchery of history and my history as well. But yeah, at that moment, it was just like I just had something to look the other way. And I was still barely hanging on.
I love that you said that you were able to look back at that moment and say this was actually the best thing that happened to me, 'cause you could have stayed stuck,
I know, yeah.
right? I think, I believe, not I think, I believe that hard times are a part of how we have to live, right? Like, nobody is exempt from experiencing any type of turmoil, trauma, whatever on this earth. And we have the withal to choose, is this where I want to stay stuck? Right. That's so crazy. I was saying that to myself this morning, and I was like, why did this even hit me? Like, I was just, for some reason in my mind this morning, I don't know, my brain be doing some weird stuff, but I was just like, I just kept hearing, you have the choice to not stay stuck. But I was like, and I like was just like looking, I was just like, but I don't feel stuck. And I was like, but who is that for? So maybe it's not for me. Maybe, it's not for you, but it was meant for this conversation. Because somebody else needed to hear it. You have the, like, you don't have to stay stuck, right? You don't have to. It's because you could, like, as hard as that season was, the depression and the suicidal thoughts and all of that, over time, it would have became easy to stay there, right? It, like, depression can become a comfortable place. Because now you formed an identity of being a depressed person instead of I was depressed at this point in time. Right? So it's you can you have choice in who you want to become, and those dark moments give you the space to say, okay, so like what are we doing? You want to stay here or you want to move from here? 'Cause both are hard, right? My pastor always says, like, life is hard, but you get to choose your hard.
Yeah, I love that.
Right? You get to choose, and you chose to keep dragging yourself forward and keep pulling yourself forward and keep researching and learning and just trying to find an out that wasn't gonna like let you escape looking at self, because at some point we have to look at ourselves too, even if whatever has taken place has come from the other person, right? I always say, like, we're all mirrors of each other. So at some point, right, there's a lesson that we're learning from everybody that we engage with, and everybody's not meant to, like, everybody in every situation is not meant to stay with us forever, right? We're supposed to learn something and keep it moving. And the people that learn, they keep rising. But you, like, man, and then to be a man, like, I have to throw that out. Because just when you talk about healing and being a man, like, of course I'm not a man, but it just seems so taboo for men to heal, to feel emotions, to be vulnerable with themselves. I'm not even at like we're not even asking for you to be vulnerable with us. It's like, okay, well, we need you to connect with yourself, right? As a man, with all the stereotypes in the world that are given to men when we're talking about depression, when we're talking about suicidal ideation, when we're talking about manhood, what was like, what were you, did any of that come up for you at all? Just like be, you know, just that narrative of, oh, well, I'm a man, I gotta suck this shit up.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, well, I think I got like a very, very clear, I guess, example of how, prior to this experience and most of it during, I just did not have the capability to even really connect with my emotions. Or like I didn't even know what that was, where to begin. I remember thinking like about looking for male role models and then just nothing. And I was like, maybe my one friend's dad who I kind of know. So it's like, we as a man, I saw that we are not taught, it's not talked about. It's actually like, the other way where you're weak if you even talk or think about that. It is so taboo within, the American, at least the Philly culture. So there was none of that. I didn't even know where to begin. What kind of I was put in a position where, so I met my girlfriend, what was that, 2015, 16, and throughout our experiences, she was the one who first like showed me just emotional intelligence and how, she could kind of see and feel things that I was like, whoa. And I didn't even really kind of believe her at first, but eventually it's like, you're right so many times. It's like, all right, I trust you. And then, we got to the point where I was healing. I was doing just enough in every aspect of my life. I was healing just enough. I was working just enough. I was by no means thriving in any way, but like I had a goal, which was to move out of the States. And I was little by little doing enough to get towards that. And what really forced me open is that, my relationship with my girlfriend was becoming sour because, well, another thing, so in 2019 I got really sick, which that like I changed as a person because I just became zombie. I lost my all my energy, but the relationship just was not what it was before. Because I was still depressed, I was sick, and I was not willing to look at it, the truth of like who I had become. And I was just, trying to run away from that reality. And she was the one that like multiple times and eventually like the final time of like, look, like I see so much of potential in you, but if you don't try to like fix this, heal yourself, then it's not going to work out. Like this ain't working out. I need a partner that I can trust and feels like is there for me and is there for themselves. And so she kind of put that ultimatum on me, which made me like we moved out, then 4 months apart, I found a therapist, my life coach, mentor, and we just worked, we worked through my traumas, the getting beat up, getting sick, my relationship with my dad. We worked through how to communicate with my girlfriend. And we worked through, it was like, what do I want in my life? And what's holding me back? And what needs to change so I can actually put energy towards that every day in a healthy way.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was 2023, I want to say, the beginning of that, something like that. So that's when, like, before it was like, it was a lot of learning, like, oh, learning about emotions, learning about the thing. But I was too broken to even really, like, dive in, or just maybe get my feet wet a little bit, but it was all learning. Once the ultimatum happened and I started working with my therapist, my mentor, that's when it all opened up, where it's just like, oh, there's a lot of pain and trauma and shadow in there. You gotta look at that, or like, it's just going to eat you alive.
Yeah, 'cause you can learn all the things in the world. You can retain all this information and knowledge until you have to, or not even have to, until you are ready to embody it. That's a whole nother ball game, right? Because then, like, the embodiment means I'm ready to integrate. What does it look like to own my emotions in real time, right? Not just say that I'm owning my emotions, because we can say we're owning our emotions and then a conflict happens. And now you have to look at yourself and say, did I own up to my emotions? Was I honest with myself about how I felt? And did I express that, in the best way that I can to my partner, to my friends, to whoever, about how I feel, right? So it's like, I always talk to one of me and my girlfriends, we're always talking about integration and how people like don't really, it's not, I don't want to say not talked about enough, but it's not people who go through like that integration stage isn't discussed enough, because those are hard pivot points, right? Where you are like, it's like the final exam to like the next version of you. It's okay, you've read all these things, you've been in therapy, you've been with the life coach, you've done, the conversations are happening, you're being told over and over again from a loving place, from the person you want to be with, that XYZ needs to change. The integration is okay, like I keep hearing these things, I keep seeing these things, I've been reading these things, and now it's like, how do I lift up my foot and move it forward?
And that I learned, that is a skill. Like, that is an ability, where that think that like understanding that kind of helped me realize, where it's like, before, maybe a difficult conversation or argument with my girlfriend, and I would immediately shut down. Shut down, become defensive. Be like, no, you're a perfectionist. You expect too much. You want this, this, and this, and just shut down, and and then probably run away, get high, cycle would continue, whatever. And then once, I realized it, like, that's not helpful. And just running from the real juice, the real meat. And I had to realize it when this happens. It's like, oh, this is an opportunity. Whereas, now when that happens, I immediately feel my stomach up. Oh, there's that feeling. Okay, this means it's happening. What do I do? Okay, let me tell her. Right now I'm a little overwhelmed. Can I get like 10, 15 minutes to, deal with this? This conversation is very, very important to me, but like, I'm shutting down right now. I need to go do my, like, what's good for me, which, is I gotta go listen to music. I gotta go freestyle. I gotta go for a walk, or I gotta call a friend. It's like, so I got mechanisms that are like immediately activating because I worked through, like, I learned that emotions are really superpowers. And when you can connect to them, and it's like, oh, I'm feeling this. And I see it, my girlfriend, being a woman, being her, whatever, she's very deeply connected. She knows what she feels, she knows what it means. For me, it's a process. I need to like stop and be like, oh, what's going on here? Why am I feeling this? Oh, this is this. Oh, I need to connect. Oh, this is this. This means this. Okay, let me work through it, right? And that has, like, changed, the ability to do that has really changed my life.
Yeah.
because now I see emotions are really signals that are telling me something. And when I listen and then I act upon them, my life has gotten better. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
Sorry, yeah, I have all these I'm a post-it notes girl. So there's post-it
right.
notes all on my wall. And when you said that, I remember reading a I started reading a book. I didn't finish it, which whatever, by Joe Dispenza, and I wrote on my wall, emotions are chemical feedback. And that's exactly what they are. It's data, right? It's data for you to be able to pay attention to what's happening because our nervous system is our best friend. And it's everything is not going to feel like fear, but everything can feel like fear, right? Until you start listening to your that data that is being given to you. And now you can separate, oh no, this isn't fear. This is what happens to my body when fear is popping up. This is very close to fear, but it's whatever that other emotion is, right?
For me, a
So
lot of time it was shame.
yeah, so it's a beautiful thing when we're connecting with ourselves and able to feel, okay, what does fear feel like in my body? Or let's do shame. What does shame feel like in my body? Where does shame show up in my body? Right? And what practice do I need when that emotion comes up? And it could be breath work, it could be all of these things, but I love that you said that it's a skill. When you said that in the beginning, it's a skill. And
Really is.
oh my gosh. And it's a skill that everybody can learn, right? You can learn it, and you have to be willing to. Because then we fall into the, well, that's just how I am type thing. And I'm like, I'd be damned if I'm about to be like 80 years old talking about something that's just who I am. No, I would say if you're still here, you got plenty to learn, plenty to, tap into. Oh, that's rich. That's really rich. I wanted to tell you when you started talking about manhood for, and just like tapping into your emotions as a man. I just so happened to look at the clock and it said 333.
There you go.
So I was like, oh, that was a question that needed to be asked. Yes. And I love that even, I mean, you could have easily written your girlfriend off and just be like, oh, you're just emotional.
I could have. And the thing about that is that would have been very stupid. And I'm glad I didn't. I think deep down, I really, maybe not even deep down, shallow down to deep down, I realized that, she's probably making a point. Like she's got a point there, and she is not worth, losing this like incredibly divine relationship just because I'm not willing to like look at myself and try to become a better person. Another aspect of it, but I really at one point I broke it down, was like, everything that she was saying that she wanted for me is also what I wanted for me. It just hurt because she was saying it, and maybe it got, she was frustrated about her. She might get a little angry. And, so I had to look at myself and be like, oh no, I can't believe. But ultimately, it was just kind of her way and maybe God's way of being like, here is an opportunity for growth. You really can't grow unless there's some pain or some stress or some tension. And I made the right decision. It would have been the horrible decision to just give up because of that.
Yeah, I love that. Kudos to her. Hey, girlfriend. So one quick question, and then I have another one. But you mentioned like working with your therapist and life coach around your relationship with your dad. How does, and you can go wherever you feel comfortable with that, but how did that help you with your transition into like your become your integration, your transition into becoming, and then this taking flight to now leave the States for good.
First of all, once I started really this work, I had already left. So
Okay.
I
Okay.
was planning on leaving before,
Yeah.
just to get that clear.
Yeah.
But so one thing she really helped me with is just the perspective shift with all
Okay.
of my traumas, with my dad, with the police, with getting sick, where I had a kind of a victim, not a kind of, I had a victim mentality of like, why did this happen to me? This was so unfair and so painful, and I didn't do nothing wrong to anybody. Like, why me?
Yeah.
And then she helped me see the perspective of, no, this happened for you. This was your path. You weren't supposed to have, a healthy, normal family or just go through a normal path. That was not for you. You were supposed to get your ass beat by the police, be dragged through the mud, be depressed for years, have to deal with all of this pain and shame, because that is what was supposed to awaken your connection with source, with yourself, with life. I'm so much more passionate about life because I've been through the mud, right? And so that perspective shift was like, oh, like, no, this happened for a reason. Like, this is actually the best thing that could have happened for me, because now I get to, be me. And the journey that it led me on, like, if this hadn't happened, 2016, I moved to Thailand. That's the whole story. 2021, I moved to Ecuador. My relation, all these things, I wouldn't have, my relationship, if all this hadn't happened to me, I wouldn't be the person I was to even, I wouldn't even be prepared to have a relationship with her. You know what I'm saying? So the perspective shift, even with my dad, of like, you asked the question you asked, but like, my dad was not a good dad. My dad, it felt like he was there for me because he took me to all my games and I played baseball, basketball, football. So my dad was there and I appreciate that. But in every other aspect of my life, besides sports, my dad was not there. My mom, my dad got divorced when I was 5, and I didn't even realize that until I was 18. But then, and he passed away, it's going to be almost 5 years. Wow. I was able, after that happened, I connected with his brother and my cousins and the family. And like, I already knew, but I just got so many more layers of like, my dad went through so much hell himself. Like, my dad, this is deep, but I'm gonna go for it, whatever. My
Go for
dad's
it.
great grandmother, with my dad, great grandmother was raped by her slave master. And then, so his grandma was born out of that. And this is like, this is late 1800s.
We
So
talking about
after slavery,
generational trauma,
generational trauma, and so my dad's parents were alcoholics. They weren't there. My dad was raised by his grandmother, the woman who was born because of rape. And my dad was just, he didn't have really, like, he had a grandma who was old and couldn't really take care. He was running the streets of Southern Jersey, like all the pain and all the issues. So I was able to look at that and being like, of course he couldn't be a good dad. Like, but I wasn't supposed to have a good dad. I was supposed to, go through hell to become who I'm supposed to be. And so that perspective shift changed everything.
Welcome to the Pink Sheep Collective, right? Where we come
Let's
and
go.
break generational curses and start shifting the narrative. I got chills like running through me. This is so divine because that is that piece there is what allows for you to take your two hands, pick up your foot, and step forward into
Yes.
that integration, right? Because at some point You have to say this was actually good for me. This was, I was meant to endure this because if I didn't, I don't know who I would be today, right? Like I resonate with everything you just said, and I think it, I gotta stop saying I think it coming from a male's perspective hits a lot deeper and a lot powerful because it's a reminder that healing is available if you want it. Healing is not just this one-time thing. It's and I mean, and you're not even healing just your shit. You're healing generations of stuff, right? You're healing like generations of stuff, right? So that victim mindset that you were speaking about was passed down to you. And it just so happened that you also endured whatever you had to endure, but it made that victim mindset that much more louder, right? And
That was
so when
mixing.
we Yeah, when we talk about embodiment, people forget you've already embodied the bullshit. You've embodied the negative mindsets. You embodied the victimhood, the scarcity, the ego, the persona of the ego. You've embodied that stuff because it shows in your behaviors. So once you are able to look at yourself in that mirror, and your mirror was your girlfriend, right? Because that mirror, the I'm looking at a mirror, that mirror is not always going to, like, we see what we see, right? Our biggest heartbreaks and blessings are always going to come through people, which means the mirror that we need is going to be through people.
I agree.
So when she said to you, when you realized the things that she was saying to you wasn't her like nagging and her saying, this is what kind of man I want, she was mirroring back to you who you want to become, who you are meant to become, right? I think that's transformative in itself. Like that's powerful in itself. Wow.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So and then you said you were already in Ecuador when all of these big revelations, they're huge for me, but these big revelations started hitting for you.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting because it was really like a little step by step process
Of course, yeah.
until it was forced, like, and then I just had to crack it all open,
Yeah.
right? Because really, so from 2013 to 2014, I was super depressed, right? And then I got a little distraction by managing, and so I didn't have to look at it as much. I was still struggling. Well, 2016, a divine occurrence where my friend helped me get it. Rashid, child, she'd helped me get a job coaching basketball in Thailand. So the summer of
That's dope.
2016, I moved out to Thailand, and that was one of the best experiences of my life because that was my first experience outside of the country, which I was like planning. I wanted to get out of the country so bad, and I did. And I was coaching basketball, so it was fun, and I was experiencing this new culture and all these adventures and all this. It was just unbelievable. But even like looking back, I was still depressed. It's just that I had this amazing experience to distract me from my depression, right? So then, that was a step of like feeling happiness was a step in the right direction. Then, I came back to Philly and I started my relationship with my girlfriend and we started plotting to get out and I was really grinding, like, financially to survive and trying to stay afloat. And that was like another little step of like, okay, I can work towards a goal. Even though I was probably showing up 40%, maybe, but that was more than when I was before I was when I was depressed, I was showing up maybe 10%. So that was a step, right? Then we plan that, we plot out, we explore different places, then we move to Ecuador. And now it's like, okay, this is happening. I've been dreaming about this for years, and I'm gonna do this, and it's gonna be so good. And all that excitement was like another little step, but at the same time, I was still depressed. I was still struggling, but I had this new exciting thing to look at, so I didn't have to look at my depression. And so we started our journey together, and that was also very difficult because still, like, I wasn't really showing up the way that any partner would want for them their partner. And now we're in the middle of nowhere, Ecuador, trying to like figure out our life together. And so
Perfect setup.
exactly. And it's like, so like I was like feeling better little by little, so I felt like I was really doing something. But it wasn't until, 2 years, about almost 2 years into Ecuador, where like, the mask, the facade was starting to show, where, I just wasn't showing up. And then that's when, it kind of made the ultimatum of like, look, like, you need help. And you're either gonna go get help or it's not gonna work. And then that's when it, yeah.
It's I always say God is funny, because when you start getting dragged out to the middle of nowhere, it's like, hey.
Yo, that experience was something else.
Wow, but it's I mean, I laugh now, right? Like, you laugh
Right.
now because you can, hindsight is always your teacher. But it's like, I mean, like, well, for me, like, I'm thinking back to being in Cambodia. It's like being in the middle of nowhere, as hard as it was, it made me become that much more present.
Yeah, I can agree. I
That
agree with
much more
that.
present, right? And like you said, whatever mask you've been wearing all this time, it had no choice but to fall off,
Right.
because survival is gonna ask you to become a certain type of person. Then it's like, well, I don't want to just survive. And it's like, you drop me in the middle of nowhere. Now you really gotta, hit that new grind button. So now you're in Ecuador. What is life like in Ecuador, right? Like, you've shared all these highs and lows, and I think even you, like, moving out to Thailand, and just like these were like you were you had these glimmers that kept taking place, right, throughout your story, which is beautiful to capture. Now you're in Ecuador, right? You've passed that 2 year mark of just like trying to settle in and really find you, your rhythm, you and your girlfriend's rhythm. What is life like now for you in Ecuador?
Right now, my life is beautiful beyond belief. It's such a blessing. So we've been here for 5 years, and I'm trying to. So we got here with 2021. I can't. The math is not math. And where are we? 2 years.
COVID killed everything when it comes to time. So I'm like,
We did 8 months, and then that's 2 years, and then that's 3 years, and then for 4 years. Yeah, something's not adding up in my head. But right now, my life is beautiful, and it was definitely a challenge to get here. Like, the first 2 years was not the case, especially, well, the first. So first, we had maybe like 4 or 5 months, found our place. Then we were in the middle of nowhere for 8 months, just us two. We were outside of a town of 2,000 people, not a foreigner in miles and miles. And she was pretty much in, she was fluent Spanish. I knew very little Spanish. And it was just us two. And that was like the beginning of just like struggles. And like, I thought it'd be this cool experience being in a farm. It was, it was, I grew up in Philly. It was the first time in my life I could step outside butt naked and just nobody around. That's, there's so many, there's also incredible parts of it. But it was very difficult. Then we moved in to closer to where we live now, which, so I live outside of a, it's like a hippie foreigner town. And we moved onto a farm. And we did that for almost 2 years. And that was a beautiful experience because we lived with the herbalist who knew so much about plants and living with the land. And we did a work exchange. So we didn't pay rent. We just helped on the farm and helped on all these things. So we learned so much. Like, before that, I was like, oh, I can't wait to learn how to be a farmer. And then after that, it's like, oh, I know how to grow food. I am a farmer now. Like, we learned. So that was an amazing experience, but that also like presented its challenges. During that time was also when my girlfriend was like, you got to get your shit together. It's not going to work, right? So we left the farm, and when we left the farm was when I decided it was time for me to start my coaching practice. Because like, leading up to then, that's when I guess the most profound work was done. Where, I really looked, cracked open my soul, looked at all the difficulties, trauma, darkness, and worked through it to the best of my ability at that time. Then when I started my life coaching was when I really like, even probably before that, but what I say is the one of the most beautiful aspects of our life right now is we have oriented our entire life around health. So it's like, sleeping great, what do we eat, moving our bodies, healthy practices. My girl's an herbalist, so she's got all sorts of tinctures and, herbal remedies and all of these things. And so it's just all based around what is best for us. And then I started, I really dove into the life coaching thing, and I started life coaching myself of like creating healthy systems of how, like, what do I want in my life? How can I get it? What are practices, that were beneficial to me? What habits do I have that are holding me back? How do I improve that? So I started doing all that to myself to the point where it's like, I don't know, I just have a wonderful relationship with my life because I know what I want. I wake up every day pursuing my passions, and luckily both of, my business and my job are both aligned with my purpose, which is incredible. And then I know how to balance, time for just life tasks, time for with my girl, time with myself. I'm very, very conscious about these things. And I live on a beautiful farm surrounded by nature, on a farm owned by an indigenous family with the matriarch and the patriarch have 11 kids. So it's just like this big family farm that we get to learn with them, and we're becoming closer with them. And my life coaching practice is moving in the right direction. I've had 11 clients at one point. I'm down to six right now, but really I'm working, now I'm starting the social media journey where I'm creating content that's, helpful. Just wants to be mutually beneficial. That's my whole thing is just like trying to create healthy community and be mutually beneficial. Where I feel like what I can provide can help you change your life for the better. And then, what I want back is to be able to support my future family, hopefully. So yeah, I really like through it all, and my best friend was the one who told me that everything, well, what happened with the police was the best thing that happened to me. And that was in 2012. And really within, about a couple, maybe 8 months ago, we moved into this new place where it all kind of felt like, wow, like it's all working out. Like, and the last thing I'll say is I really feel like, all of the boxes except financially are checked, which is physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, I feel great, better than I could have ever imagined. And right now, my main focus is, creating a business that financially I can create stability. And, I make enough, especially the low cost of living in Ecuador. It's like, yeah, enough, but, I want abundance and to be able to share.
The way the new earth is settling in, all of the new earth leaders, right? We're watching in real time systems crumble. We're
Yes.
watching in
Woo.
real time Leaders, I'm getting chills. Leaders being exposed. Veils are no longer thin, they're off. The sheets are pulled back. People can't hide behind their egos anymore. People can't hide behind their money anymore, right? We have been witnessing last year, and we'll witness it even more this year, but it's like it's literally the Tower card in tarot that we're witnessing, and it's good for us, right? Because us healers, all throughout this time, we've been doing the true inner work needed to lead. When it comes down to it, your purpose is to lead and to steward other people, right? It might be through this podcast, it might be through social media, it might be through retreats, it might be through program planning. Like, in some way, shape, or form, our purpose is tied to people. It has everything has been set up for leaders to do what hasn't been done, and that's to take care of mind, body, spirit.
Yes.
So, because you've given your container, right? The body. I talk about this all the time. My listeners probably like, here she go, but I love this. I love this work. Because we've given ourselves permission to rest, to heal, to tap into our shadow, to touch those deep, dark places, to rise from those places, to drop whatever veil, whatever mask, whatever, all of those things, to endure those hardships, to figure out what foods we want. Right? I've been vegan 6 years this year, right? It's like I have that rhythm now, right? To find our true divine rhythm, because that true divine rhythm is exactly who we were created and cultivated to be, right? So that financial piece, I always say, right? And I had a friend tell me this, and then I had to like remember it for myself, because same boat, that financial piece is on its way, because you've already said yes to abundance. The abundance is the rest. The abundance is you living on a farm and being able to grow your own food, but first learning how to do that, right? Because eventually you're going to have to teach someone, like another man is going to want to do the same thing. And now you got a program right then and there, right? You're gonna have kids, and now to keep this new system going, you're gonna have to teach them how to do that, right? So you literally had to destroy a system, your own family system, so that you could create a new one. And one that is going to be fruitful, one that is already abundant, one that is going to heal so many, so like your kids are not even going to understand when you talk about certain things. You'd be like, what? Like it's bananas, right? How much we had to endure, how much you have to endure to kill off a system, right? You had to
Community of
die to
one.
your yeah, you had to die to yourself, which means dying to whatever your last name was and the system that was created from that. So like everything behind you is dead. And you've rebuilt a new system, and brother, that is the most beautiful thing ever. That no one can ever take this from you. So the financial resources that are coming in, blessed beyond measure.
Hey, I appreciate that so much. And yeah, I agree with you and I feel ready. And I think about all the time where, you hear stories about when money does come to people, they change or they act different. But I'm so confident that that ain't gonna happen to me. Like, I feel very aligned with my purpose. And like, I understand that like my family, my friends, my community is, that's the most important thing to me, even before any of the spiritual stuff. That was always like what the just the most important aspect of my life. And yeah, another part that I guess I just feel so grateful or blessed about is because, right now I feel like I'm really aligned walking in my purpose or passion. And so the outcome is for God to decide. Whether I affect 10 people, my clients, or whether I affect millions, that's not really up to me. Like, what's up to me is day by day using my free will to try to, be in align with love and purpose or passion or whatever the case may be.
All of it, yeah.
And I feel ready for whatever because I've already kind of been through a lot. So it's like,
Yeah.
whatever, bring it on. Like right now, I'm really just blessed that every day, like I have so much peace. My life is just peaceful. That's kind of like unbelievable in a sense where before, whatever, months ago, I used to be like, it's too peaceful. Like, what's about to happen? Like, and now I'm just like, no, this is just it. Like, I earned this and I deserve this and I can from this foundation is the best place for me to help others. So, whatever comes, that's for God. My preparedness is what, I feel ready for whatever and I feel blessed to be where I'm at.
That's the best place to be, law of detachment. Yeah.
There you
Coach
go.
Lewis, thank
Hey.
you. Thank you.
Thank
Thank you.
you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for sharing your story with us. Stories are beautiful. I love doing this, guys.
Well, yeah, I appreciate this. It's not every day that I get to have a
Yeah.
convo like this.
Oh, it's beautiful, beautiful. And we will be right back. There is something so special about people trusting you with their story, people giving you access to their trials, their tribulations, their dark spaces, the things that they've had to endure to become, and even their becoming, right? There's such a richness to it. And I think what stood out to me the most about Coach Lewis's story is there's the how much of the people that we have in our lives that we engage with on a day-to-day basis, even if it's for a season, if like whatever it is, have the mirror, right? We all hold the mirror to one another. But how healing people can be, even if like I think for me, right? I think I'm reflecting from like my own space, but I would actually love to hear how this lands for other people. For me, it's always been I've had to leave people to heal, right? Like there's people that I've had to evolve away from in my healing. And it's been rare that I've been able to heal with the same person over time. So I find some deep value in that, right? That part of partnership where it's the mirror is like the mirror of seeing one another and wanting more for one another and fighting for one another in a way that produces safety, that produces softness, that produces care, that produces healing is the most beautiful thing ever. And to be doing that, moving from the United States to another country is, I think that in itself just speaks its own volumes. Y'all know I love, I just at some point in life, I will not be living in the United States. I just know it. I just know it. But I love how we can find that place for us, that calls our soul so deeply that it's the original intent of what home was supposed to be for us. Our souls came here to do a thing, to live a thing, and redesign a story that is beyond us, that happened before us and will live on beyond us. And we are meant to do that. So I love how settled Ecuador feels for him now, him and his better half, and just the freedom, right? The healing that happens to where now organically everything you do is not, I have to do this to heal. It becomes a lifestyle. When healing becomes a lifestyle, you are living a well life. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love doing this. I love just the narration of people's stories, the meaning behind them, all of it. Constantly reminded that I'm living in my purpose. And I just saw 333 again as I'm recording this little tail end part, but I'm constantly reminded that I'm living in my purpose. And that's what it's all about, is aligning with your highest and greatest good and the version of us that God called us to be before we even got here. So, nice big inhale and exhale. I want to also, because there were parts of this that were a little bit heavy. I want to share the suicide hotline, because of what was shared, in his own experience. I've been there before. Call it what it is. There, like, we know somebody that has been there before if we ourselves haven't. So this is the suicide hotline. It is 988. You can text, you can chat. There's a website. I will put all that information in the show notes also. It's 24 hours. There's English and Spanish languages. I don't believe that there's any other languages outside of that, but please do not do life alone. I think that's another reason why I love the power of storytelling, and why this theme, stories as medicine, came to me. And it's not even a theme. It's like that. It's the work that I do. It's just the work that I do is really allow the stories of people to be the testimony that someone needs, the data that we need to inform things that need to change, the realness of what day-to-day life is as a woman, as a black woman, as a man, as a black man, as a Hispanic man, whatever that's happening. I'm very vocal about ICE and this dumbass administration. So I'm not holding my tongue. I'm not, I've never kept my story a secret, no parts of me. And everyone that has been on my show since the day I started my podcast, even though it's been through so many name changes, the root stays the same. And if I can hold space for people to be able to heal, one, heal through telling their story, and two, give somebody else permission to be free and heal from hearing their story, I've done the thing. I've done the job. I've done what I've come here to do. So I don't want us to do life alone. I want us to do it together. This is a community space at this point. Like, I don't know how many listeners I have. I pay attention, but I don't. And I know it's changed throughout the years because I've changed throughout the years and so much has changed throughout the years. But it's here. This podcast is here. It's not going anywhere. It's just going to keep getting refined and more refined and more refined. And I want to hold this space for people to tell their stories. We heal by our testimony, and others heal by our testimony. So I love you all for free. We don't have to do this life alone. We shouldn't be doing life alone. We don't need to. So I love you. If no one has told you that today, I love you. And I love you for free. Take care.